Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Host Advantage Show. That's right, yeah. We're going through some rebranding. We think the having podcast name kind of limits us to just a podcast. So, because we want to expand it a little bit, we might have to do some live streams, like some charity live streams in the future, maybe some giveaways, other things that, you know, would be beyond just being a podcast. So we are now the Host Advantage Show. So good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you are. The long-awaited episode of the Host Advantage Show's Game of the Year, or to be more particular, Games of the Year. We do have a few to mention. Chris, would you like to start us off?
I would love to. So, my first game is Psychonauts 2.
Oh, good one.
And this, as a longtime fan of the game, having played it on the original Xbox way back in like 2005, whenever it came out, mm-hmm. having the sequel teased way back when, and then to not have it, and then to get a kind of VR 1.5, which I heard is okay, but I never got around to playing it.
It was fun for about 10 minutes, and I installed it, but that's whatever.
Yeah. And the second one takes place right after that. A continuous story. Double Fine knocked out of the park for me on this one. It had improved the first game in every way possible. And like the characters, the storytelling, the humor, the abilities, gameplay. It still feels like it has that kind of like PS2 era gameplay jank to it, mm-hmm. but it's far better than its original counterpart. Mm-hmm. But the minds that you delve into and the stories that they tell in those minds, a lot of like showing and not telling, and they really put a lot more like loving care into people who have their own insecurities and mental issues, mm-hmm. and put like a spotlight on it and like very lovingly nurture it and not like treat it as a joke, mm-hmm. or even like in any kind of mean-spirited bad taste, mm-hmm. and it, I mean, Jack Black's in it. He's got a great song in there. Has like a nice bonus. He's awesome. Microsoft really saved the day by buying them out and giving them all the money they needed to. It's a fascinating development story because they would have cut a lot of content, even with their Kickstarter in like 2016. It wouldn't have been the full game without that merger. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's fantastic. I'm just scratching the surface on how good it is.
Yeah, how quickly did you beat it?
I nearly 100%ed it. I'm missing like two figments, which are collectibles throughout the game, and they're just so scattered. I tried to 100% it. I'm at like 99.9. But I don't know how many hours I put into it, but I feel like I took my time with it, even though it was one of those games that you put on all the time when you get on to play. Mm-hmm. But having a child puts a damper on your binging of something. But yeah. it was a good amount of story and time. I didn't feel like it was too short or too drawn out. Mm-hmm.
So what I really liked about Psychonauts was that it kind of brought the feelings that you have into a 3D realm. So if like, you know, it manifested stress and you could like kill it and light it on fire and beat the shit out of it. And mm-hmm. doing that to, you know, a physical, you know, form of something that's purely in your head was kind of satisfying, because, you know, who doesn't want to do all that shit to their negative thoughts?
Yeah. And like even just like sensory overload, and it's like, how do we embody that as like an enemy? And it's just like this kind of like four-legged, just like rainbow colored spazzy thing, mm-hmm. yeah. that is like lightning fast, and it's pretty neat. Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, someone's being held back, like when you say like, oh, someone's being held back by their insecurities, well, in the game it's literally like, you know, like an anvil called insecurities holding someone back, and like it's mm-hmm. it's nice that it's, you know, it's got like a physical representation and you can like, you know, manipulate it and kill
Absolutely.
It and all those things. So Psychonauts was a good one. The game that I only had two games of the year that I think for me were my personal games of the year, and one of them is Knockout City. And
yeah.
the game, I think what happened was we we as gamers were stuck in this sort of purgatory where, like, oh, every release is like a new shooter, it's a weird puzzle game or something that's been done before. But like Knockout City is like this, it's a certified fresh take on like an arena quote-unquote shooter, but you're using dodgeballs, and like it's such a simple mechanic: catch, pass, and throw. And with those three things, like, you can play that game for like hours on end, and every knockout still feels crisp, still feels fresh. It's super satisfying. The sound design, the game mechanic design, it's all so well done from Velen Studios. They did such a great job. I have like very little critiques for the game because we haven't talked about it much. It's never really had its own episode. And so this is the episode it gets to shine on, luckily for them. But it's just so much fun because it's got that hype level of like, you know, pass it to me. I can flank around and, you know, curve the ball and do like, it feels like you're doing trick shots, but it's just part of the game, and everything just feels, it's so rapid fire, so quick. A lot of playing chicken too, which I like to do. And it's just so well done. And it was free for us because we have Game Pass. And it's like, even if it wasn't free, it's definitely worth picking up at full price. Like, support your developers, support Velen Studios, the indie guys. They, amidst a pandemic, I think they knocked it out of the park. And we've played it. It's in our rotation. It's either Overwatch, Halo, or Knockout City. And like, anytime we play Knockout, unless we're getting like stomped by people, we're always having a blast. So,
and I even like the kind of like environment atmosphere that it has going for it. This kind of like futuristic, retro neon jukebox hologram aesthetic. It opens itself up to like a lot of, I feel like, in-game appropriate cosmetics. Like, they're all like wacky and zany and like really bright and colorful, and it fits to this tone, as opposed to like something like Gears of War. If you were to get a like rainbow pink gun, it doesn't feel tonally appropriate when you're chainsawing somebody in half with it.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
This works for it, and it adds like a lot of charm to it and gives it a lot of like breathing room for, not that I technically want to support it, but like future cosmetics and season passes and stuff.
They did a great job, and I'm super proud of them. You told me about them, so how did you find out about it?
I just saw it on I think it was E3 at the time, or one of like the Nintendo Directs. I follow it, and I thought it looked interesting, but I think it was Nintendo, because I saw it and I was like, oh, the online server is probably gonna stink. But it wasn't just for Nintendo. It was just premiered at that showcase. So I think they had more dedicated servers in line for something like that,
right,
which makes it crucial to be able to play. But yeah, I just keep my ear to the ground and I try and figure out what's up. excuse me. And also, I like that this arcade game or this indie game really felt like when Rocket League first came out.
That's a good comparison.
It just had that like immediate hook for us.
Yeah, 3v3, like, it's a small team based game. There's 3v3, sometimes it can go to 4v4, I think, and like 2v2v2. But like, it's a simple map. Like, you're never like looking for people. There's always something going on every map, and you can always just jump right in. It's incredibly satisfying.
Even like the specific dodgeballs that they have. The moon ball.
The specials one. Yep, sniper ball. The
multi-ball.
Yeah,
it's all really fun. It's really easy to get into. It's very charming.
Yeah, I think at the least, anyone who's listening should at least just try it out. And if you don't like it, it's all good. But if you do, like, I didn't, like, I had my reservations at first. I was like, a dodgeball game? What is this, for 10-year-olds? But it's like a lot of fun. Like, it doesn't. It's not just for, you know, that particular crowd. There's the mechanics behind it and the quick thinking and all the rapid fire stuff is challenging, but it's not like impossible to master, which is why I think it's so attractive to us, because it's like it's not often that we get stomped on people. It's usually the games are pretty fair, but it's definitely worth trying out.
Agreed.
Yeah. What's another one of your games of the year?
So, pretty a bit of a tonal shift. This is the AAA game that I'm sure is on your list too, but Halo Infinite definitely deserves a spot on here.
100%.
A game that should not have come out this year. It should have been last year. But man, thank God they actually delayed it a year.
Yeah.
Because this game is not perfect by any stretch. But man, they hit a lot of stuff out of the park. They really nail stuff like the grapple shot.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, I can see how much time and development was put into that mechanic alone. And it works, like, all the time. I've never really had a reoccurring issue or, like, a blatant problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not my own fault. You know, like, oh, I meant to hit the ground, but I got the weapon instead. And I was just
right, yeah, that's accuracy. The only other thing, yeah.
But, like, they released the beta early. Campaign came out less than a month after that. And I have a lot of reservation with 343 handling the Master Chief, the Halo franchise, but this is probably their best of the three that they've released in the mainline story. I don't include Halo Wars in this one.
Yeah.
But this is where I get so conflicted, because it's such a fun game and I like the open world aesthetic, but that also kind of like hindered it a little bit in the sense that a lot of the environment felt very samey. And it's like you had the forest area and then like the Forerunner bases, and that was kind of it. Whereas opposed to like in the old games, you had like, oh, here's like an old temple, and then you have like the Halo ring interior, and then you're at a waterfall area that has like old pelicans and bases here, and there was a lot more like variety and color tone, like snow and rocky areas. And but all that aside, it was kind of reinvigorating a little bit for the franchise to have the open world aspect, especially kind of like taking ODSTs and really like blowing it up. Even though ODST was still pretty like linear, it still felt like it had that kind of like, well, the visor system and kind of picking up things on the fly and trying to like scavenge around. But Halo was still very deserving to be on here.
Absolutely. Like
I critique it because I love it. And I don't want my constant negativity to be misconstrued as, oh, you don't really like the game. But I actually really love the game. I love the franchise. I care about it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Arguably too much if I'm always saying the negative stuff.
The campaign was so different than before, because before it was strictly just linear, but now it's completely open world, very similar to Far Cry. And like with campaigns, if I enjoy the campaign, I will try my best to 100% the game. Otherwise, I'm just like, I just want to beat the campaign so I can go to multiplayer. Like, I've always had a thing where I want to beat the campaign before I jump into multiplayer. This was like Call of Duty fucking 3 days. It's a long time ago. But the campaign is so damn good. Like, you can easily sit down and play it for 4.5 hours straight. Like no problem at all, because there's always something to do. There's always a fob to capture. There's always a brute chieftain VIP to kill who's got a ravager that shoots flames. Like there's always some kind of reward for everything that you do that makes the effort worth it, which is just a ton of fun for me.
Yeah, I definitely felt like, well, I should go to sleep, but I can just get this armor locker just really quick down the road here, down this mountain. And then that kind of expanded to, oh, well, there's a fob station right there. I'm right next to it. I'll just capture it. And then that kind of expanded the world map a little bit. And I was like, well, I have all this stuff. So it was hard for me to also, like, stop playing.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. Ton of fun. Not much replayability, but with open world games, there's not meant to be.
Yeah, once you kind of collect everything that's you've experienced.
Unless you're doing legendary mode, which we will do at some point, and it'll be a ton of fun. Hopefully it won't be a buggy mess or anything, but it'll be a ton of fun. The only criticisms that I had for the campaign were that a lot of the abilities I did not use at all. So like grapple shot, threat sensor, and the drop shield, like thrusters were completely useless to me. And then what was the other one? I feel like there was one more.
There is one more. I'm struggling to remember. Oh, was it just your armor? Just like upgrading your suit?
Oh, yeah, defense? You're right. Yep. There's that one too. But yeah, the thrusters were, and plus, like, navigating that equipment menu during a fight would be so hard to memorize.
Yeah, I imagine that's crucial on Legendary. Yeah, fuck. Being able to swap and, like, drop the shield and then swap to a thruster really quick and then grapple away. And doing I can see how that'd be fun, but when co-op comes out, I feel like that is going to be a lot more enjoyable for us, especially on the harder difficulties.
Yeah. Getting, like, when we play on Legendary event, inevitably, I feel like it's going to be mandatory that we get Spartan cores first, so we upgrade our armor and our grapple shots and drop shields, whatever, before we take on, you know, the elite with the sword that runs twice the speed, like that kind of, those kinds of confrontations, because that's gonna suck.
Yeah,
heroic wasn't too punishing. A couple bosses really took wasn't. Like, well, honestly, the you know, spoiler alert for the next like 20 seconds or so, there's these like brute brothers that killed me more than the final boss did, and like
I must have gotten really lucky.
You must have.
They didn't give me. I did it on my first try.
I also had like a shock rifle and a commando, so I wasn't very well prepared. But yeah, those guys were fucking tough.
I grappled the chopper and I jacked the guy and he just stood there and I just mulched him and I was one down already, and then the other one I just kind of he hit in like a base upper area and I just threw a lot of grenades I just kind of so long as the shields didn't recharge too quickly. I got lucky.
Yeah, but
I will say there was one more thing about the campaign that I should note. Compared to the last the last two Halo games that 343 did, playing Halo Infinite and going through the campaign kind of reinvigorated my like my thirst for the lore, and just kind of like when I beat it, I was like, oh wow, I really should remember what the precursors were, or like what was the story with the Covenant and the Halo rings. And I kind of did like this Halo wiki deep dive and just kind of like absorbed it all, and it was really fun. And I think that's a really good thing that they were able to do, because they alluded to a thing in the game and it never actually like appeared in the game, which is, it's cool. I want them to expand it, the world, more, because it's a massive it's a massive franchise that can definitely break out from the fight between people and the Covenant. But I was kind of hoping for just a little bit more. I guess I'm just thirsty for it and I just wanted it to... Yeah.
It's been a hell of a dry spell.
Yeah, I mean, 6 years is a long time to develop a sequel.
But damn, was it good.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And multiplayer is still going strong, even though that has its own issues that we have covered already.
Yeah. It's weird because the issues aren't like a technical thing. It's just like decisions being made by I don't even know if that's a developer or a publisher thing, but the big team battle thing, I guess that would kind of be a technical issue.
Yeah, that one absolutely. You can't even find a game now, and if you do, it takes you 20 minutes to load into it.
Yeah, and then the whole fiasco about cosmetics, which, if you're listening, you've probably heard the previous episode, and that's a whole fucking thing.
And if you heard the previous episode, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate you. But yeah, it's a overall incredibly solid release, especially amidst other rocky releases.
Oh God, yeah.
It definitely stood out as Game of the Year, like without a doubt. Like as soon as we discussed making this episode, I immediately knew that you would pick it for Game of the Year, and I'm sure I would pick it for Game of the Year as well.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also always on the same frequency, so.
It is actually one of my Game of the Years. As much as I loved Halo, and as much as I look forward to the next installment, it was actually dethroned as my personal favorite game of 2021.
Ooh.
And for me, that was Metroid Dread.
I knew it. I fucking knew you'd pick Metroid.
I
and love action.
I love the 2D side-scrolling Metroid games. I love Metroidvanias. I love games like Hollow Knight, Guacamelee. They're so easy to get into, and they're so fun to play and to like experience and to backtrack, like Ori and all of that. So to have another, like, it's called a Metroidvania. Like, it was one of like the grandfathers of this genre, right next to Castlevania in terms of world and ability gaining and backtracking and going left to right. Groundbreaking. So to be surprised at E3 to see the reveal trailer along with gameplay and a release date for that very year, I just was a husk after that. I was just so excited and it was just completely drained from overexcitement. Mm-hmm. So when the game actually came out, I, as an old school fan and even playing some of the Prime series, having to navigate the world as Samus in this game feels amazing. Like, say what you want about how Super Metroid is probably the best Metroid game to date still. You can definitely still make that argument. But man, she is so floaty, and I do not like the way she handles, which sounds really weird. But this game, it just completely annihilates. Like, it's just so crisp. The wall bouncing is easy, and then just sliding, and the inclusion of the Emmys, which are these resource drones that have been put onto the planet to scavenge and to investigate an anomaly, and they turn on Samus and they just chase her, and to just kind of like have that tension of something running towards you and you need to flee because you cannot combat them in any way until later. It's so like, it made me so giddy. I'm just like, ooh, stop chasing me. It's just like kind of running away from them and just like, stop. And I'm just kind of like bouncing away from them, and they're climbing walls trying to get me. And it was a lot of fun. And then the bosses in this game, I'm so glad you finally got a Switch. You finally pulled the trigger this year, because I want to let you experience this game, because the bosses are so challenging.
Oh god.
But they are so fun. Like, it is amazing how many times you'll die on one of the bosses. But then you'll replay the story from the start if you ever do that, or just refight the boss. You blow them out of the water. Like, you just get such an understanding of the mechanics and the nuances and their signals and like cues before they make an attack, and you just counter it so well, and you just become such a badass. It's so, like, I've died so many times on, like, the final boss in particular. I must have died at least a dozen times. But it's so fun, and
that's
it's
what
so
makes a good boss.
It's so badass. Like, they're one of my favorite bosses of, like, all time, just playing these things. And it's just, like, even where they took the story, not going to say any spoilers, but, like, it made me want more when it ended in, like, a very positive way. Like, it ended, and I was like, oh, so good. I just wanted, please, just nestling some for more. And this game just came out, and I'm just hoping for a Metroid 6 or like some continuation of the story in some capacity as soon as possible. But I know that's always a gamer's dream, is to continue to consume and to get the sequels immediately. But I'm really looking forward to if they make another one.
Is there a difficulty selection?
Yes, there is.
Okay. Did you beat it on the hardest difficulty?
I was making my run through on the hardest difficulty, and I just kind of stopped. Not because I was bored of it or anything, but other games had come out at the time, and I just kind of put it by the wayside. But I 100%ed my normal run through by collecting all the power-ups and doing all the Shine Spark challenges and everything like that. So I had consumed all the game. I just didn't do it on the hardest difficulty.
Gotcha. Do you have plans to?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to get back to it. Even just to kind of run around a little bit more and blast a few aliens. Again, it's just very satisfying, and some of the power-ups are really fun to use as well. I want you to play the game.
I will. I'm sure I will at some point.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds great. Like,
yeah, it's spectacular, and it's not the longest either, which is, it's depends on your stance on paying $60 for a game that I think I beat in 11 hours the first run through, and I could have easily cut that down to at least 8 in my second, even on hard mode, you know. But it's for me, it is a Nintendo Switch staple of a game.
Nice. I think it's a good way to put it.
If you have a Switch, I would definitely recommend you play this game. Because, man, I popped off so hard a lot on this game. And and that was just by myself. I wasn't even with anybody. Yeah. I had nobody. And I was just like, whoa! And just, like, the cutscenes, and, like, you have, like, this parry mechanic where you can counter a boss or enemies, for that matter. And that leads into, like, a small, like, cinematic cutscene where she's just, like, running off the wall and, like, shooting and sliding. And it's very exciting.
And who's the studio, if you want to shout them out?
Mercury Steam did this one, which they also handled the 3DS remake of Metroid Return of Samus, which is the second mainline Metroid game. So they also did a 3D Castlevania game, which I don't think was the greatest in Castlevania standards, but that was enough for them to kind of say, hey, Nintendo, we would like to do something with your property. Do we have your permission? And they're like, yeah, you can remake this game. And they're like, great. And it was good. It was awesome. It's hard to go back to, especially after you play Dread, because this is just an improvement on that in every way. But if you've never played 2, I would recommend you play Samus Returns, which is the remake, because it's just better and it's less awkward. And like, the original Metroid is it's so hard to play. It's definitely a product of its time, but it was also very groundbreaking because, again, you played games like Mario where you just go right. But Metroid, you play that left. And you go left. Amazing. It's so novel. And you also can go up and down. But man, it's the world is like all the same looking thing and it's hard to navigate. And it's very rocky by today's standards. But that game definitely belongs inside of like a museum as just like a period piece. And yeah, I'm so happy and delighted that they actually made a follow-up Metroid game that was 2D, because that's something that I've wanted for a long, long time, because the previous game came out in like 2004, the Game Boy Advance.
The Game Boy Advance.
Yes, and I played that Metroid Fusion. I love Metroid Fusion to death. I love that game. That game scared me so hard. I had to close my eyes for a certain scene because there's like an anti-Samus, if you will.
Oh, shit.
And it zooms in on her visor, and it is just like this blank stare with no pupils, and the music just kind of like, and it cuts away quickly. Every time I replayed that game, which I don't know how I had the balls to do it, again, it scared me. I would always just cover the screen, or I'd close my eyes until the music cue ended, and then she would go away.
Safe.
Yeah, I'm safe. It's not gonna get me now.
So, Metroid Tattoo when?
You know, I like to think about Metroid tattoos a lot, and I like a lot of the triangular shapes that they have throughout Metroid Dread. I'll show you later that I think about often, but you know me, commitment issues, baby.
Yeah.
But with that all out of the way, I have a question for you.
Fire.
Since we didn't do this last year, we never actually talked about our Game of the Year for 2020. But I know that two games in particular officially released that we consider very high on like the gaming spectrum. Hades and Half-Life Alyx.
Oh my god.
Which do you choose? I know they're very different. Like one, like that in terms of how you play them, yes. In terms of style, in terms of everything, like AAA studio, indie studio, they're polar opposites almost. Like
that is a very, very good question, because I was here's the thing. I was thinking about making this an entire episode, but I could probably fit it into a nutshell, which is perfectly fine. So I have a list of perfect games. Games that I would not change whatsoever. And it's funny because the game that triggered the making of this list was Half-Life Alyx.
Oh.
Because the game, pretty much perfect. Like, it is, like, if you ever get a VR headset, I feel like the mandatory games are like Pavlov, Super Hot, and Half-Life Alyx. Half-Life Alyx is just so fucking good. I cannot recommend it enough. I think it is worth like $130. It is such a fucking great game, and it is so well optimized for any GPU you have. I have a 6 gig 1060, which is a very like mid to lowish range GPU, and the game looks like I'm running it on a 3090. It looks so fucking good. And like, graphics aside, the pacing, the tone, the suspense, the grabbing mechanics, the recoil, like everything just feels so real and perfect, and it you feel like you're in City 17, and you know the Citadel. Like you look at the Citadel, and like I remember your face. I took pictures of the first time you played Half-Life, Alex. We spent like 15 minutes on that patio, just looking at the Citadel, picking up soda cans, shaking this bottle with some liquid in it, throwing a rock at the cat, whatever. It was just so much fun because it's everything is just so well done. Like it feels like everything was touched by a god, like a god developer. Like if you took the best developers of audio, storyboarding, graphics, gameplay mechanics, reload, like animation, everything, it's like they all congregated on this project and they were like, fuck it, like we haven't released a Half-Life thing in like 20 something years, this would probably piss off the fans a bit, but we got some money and the VR realm hasn't been tapped very much, so let's do a VR title. And like it's just so fucking good. Like I wasn't even upset that it wasn't like a actual sequel to, you know, the Half-Life series, like I'm sure a lot of other people were, but it's just so fucking good. I thought it would just be like, oh, like Mass Effect 1, 2, 3, Andromeda. Like, I thought it'd be like that. But it was like, it's like Half-Life 1, 2. And then Half-Life Alyx is way up here, like on a completely other level. I'm going on a tangent. But yeah, it's hard to compare.
It's quite the nutshell.
It's hard to compare two games that are just so well done. And the whole god dev thing, like I apply that to Hades as well, because that game, I don't know how many hours you have in it, but I think I have like over 100. And there's just something about the mechanics, the like something about the damage, the boons feel good, the story, the voice acting is fantastic. Hades, like voice actor for Hades, voice actor for Zagreus, everybody did such a fucking good job. Like I haven't played the game in a while just because other games have come up and, you know, that's just how life works. But like everything is just so well done. I can't get enough of it. And the replayability,
like the weapons and the boons, yes, and the combinations of everything.
No run will ever be the exact same. And so like now Hades is the line. Like this is what I compare things to. This is the standard. Like if I want a perfect, like when I think of perfect games, it's always Hades and Alyx. And it's hard to compare the two because they are completely different, but they're so well done. I cannot, like,
which child do you love more?
If I had to pick one, like in terms of replayability, even then, I can't pick one because like VR is so much for me personally. VR is more fun than just like traditional gaming
controller
and keyboard or mouse and keyboard, whatever. But like Half-Life Alyx, it's just the story. There's no multiplayer aspect or anything. There are mods you can download, but I don't really jump into that much. And you can only replay the campaign so many times. But with Hades, I would argue Hades does have more replayability to it. But Half-Life Alyx doesn't. It's not really meant to have replayability. You play it once. It's reading a book. You read it. It's done. You consumed everything.
It doesn't change no matter how many times you read it. Yeah.
Like I 100% of the game. Like there's nothing more in that game that the developers could give me. Like, but Hades, like there's 500 hours and you still probably won't 100% the game.
There is specifically a thing that if you unlock Hades' room, there's a shade that can promote you.
Right.
And you can use like darkness resources to promote yourself, but it is purely for a show. It's just for bragging rights.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like that is like the kind of peak. Once you hit that, which are like, I think an insane amount of tiers, you have like finally 100% of the game. But that is, again, it's just kind of a small nugget to kind of drive for. If like in a year from now, yeah, I'll just do a run or two of Hades. You can just that, even though you've beaten the game.
Just,
you
know? One or two, okay.
Yeah, I know. It's like a potato chip. You can't have one.
It's just so fucking good. Like the amount of testing they must have done to make sure that each run through is fresh and fun. Like adding new weapons, adding new boons, new character paths. What are the
romance options?
Yeah, there's romancing options, and what are the packs of punishment, like things to make it harder. Like there's so much content there, it's ridiculous. And the amount of time they must have spent making sure every single playthrough, because after you, spoiler alert, you kill Hades, after you kill him for the first time, there's it just keeps replaying. Like you get to Megara, boom, you go back because, you know, she's really hard the first time. Then you get to Asterius and Charon. Like, there's so many bosses that you just, you beat them, or you lose to them first, but then you have to start all over and redo it. And every playthrough just is so much fun. No matter what weapon you're using, there's always ways to make it fun. And I just, hats off to the developers that made that such a fun experience.
Supergiant.
And not, yeah, Supergiant. Hats off to them for making such a repetitive experience so much fun, because you're doing the same thing, but they're tweaking your experience every single time. So I give them my highest commendations, and they, it's so hard to put the two up against each other. I'd say it's a tie. Like,
it's apples and oranges. It's like an impossible question. I'm very aware of that.
Yeah. 2020, despite the pandemic, was a great year for those two games, at least for me in general. It was just so well done. Quite the nutshell. Also, random side note, we completely missed our Host Advantage birthday.
Whoops.
It was December. I think it was December 8th. I have to go double check, but it was last month. So Host Advantage turns 1 year old. Yay.
Happy birthday.
Host Advantage is basically like Nora.
you are almost as old as my daughter. Yes. Yep. You are just a few weeks off. Yeah. So. Is there any game that you're looking forward to for this year, for 2022?
I don't know. I'd have to research. I don't know when Somerville comes out, but...
Oh, yeah, I think that's... we never got a slated date for that one. But Somerville's a good one. Didn't you like... what is it? I always forget.
Somerville is 2022.
2022. Was it Dying Light?
Oh, Dying Light 2 comes out next month. Yeah. Really excited for them.
Yeah, right now I'm just kind of looking forward to like ports of existing games onto platforms I finally have access to. Mm-hmm. 13 Sentinels will be on the Switch. God of War is coming out on PC. But like Breath of the Wild 2, or the sequel, Breath of the Wild, is something to look out for.
Last Night, still no fucking clue.
Last Night, but we got Redacted in its place whenever that's supposed to come out. So I'm happy about that. Xbox is like, yeah, we'll just do our own.
So like I said at the beginning of the episode, Host Advantage is going to be expanding a little bit. We are not just going to be doing podcasting. We're going to expand it into a sort of a show that covers primarily live streams. The idea of a charity live stream just sounds like a lot of fun to me and to us. And it would just be something nice and new for us, instead of just us babbling for an hour and 30 minutes about how much we love the grapple shot and previous Battlefield titles. But yeah, keep a lookout on our socials. We do have a Twitter. I'm probably going to get a TikTok or an Instagram soon. We'll see. But yeah, that's our Game of the Year episode. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for being here, Christopher. And we will see you next time.
More mediocre content coming your way soon.
On multiple platforms.
Yes. You can't escape us.
All right. Be good people.
Bye, everybody.